The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
And our third contestant is Jimmy Kimmel?
Kimmel. It's Kimmel. Kimmel.
Jimmy
Kimmel. All right.
Co-creator of The Man Show.
Right. This is Shameless Cross Promotion Week, and we are honored to have The Man Show here, including Adam Carolla, three of the Juggies, and Jimmy Kimmel, world's, what shall I say?
Dumbest
I
man.
To say, like my brother. Like my brother. Anyway.
Welcome, everyone. It is Wednesday, September 24th, 2025. I'm Bob Metz, and this is Just Right. Broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right wing, it's just right.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Believe it or not, that was Jimmy Kimmel in our opener, appearing as a contestant on the Win Ben Stein's Money Game Show, labeling himself the world's dumbest man. And the image accompanying this week's blog post is not an AI-generated photo. I screen-grabbed it from the very episode featured in our opener today, and it shows Kimmel putting a dunce hat on his head, where it properly belongs. I first discovered Jimmy Kimmel when he co-hosted Win Ben Stein's Money for 3 years, before moving on to be part of The Man Show on Comedy Central, which he co-created with Adam Carolla back around 2000. Kimmel was replaced then by South Park's then-head writer, Nancy Pimentel, who hosted the program through March 2002, and our audio selection and photo were both from an episode of Win Ben Stein's Money, on which Kimmel was the guest, promoting his show, The Man Show. So why are we talking about Jimmy Kimmel? Well, if you haven't heard yet, Kimmel has, of course, become a center of media attention over the past couple of weeks thanks to his public reaction to the assassination of Charlie Kirk, during which he insisted that Kirk's shooter was motivated by the MAGA ideology of the right. This was a perfect demonstration of our observation in the opening sentence of last week's blog post that the assassination of Charlie Kirk sent a shockwave across the world that exposed the political polarities of left and right on a scale never before experienced. And boy, did that ever prove to be an understatement. It is remarkable how critically important it has been for the political left and right alike to determine on which side of that polarity the shooter of Charlie Kirk was. Why this should remain so important at a time when more and more people continue to insist that left and right don't matter anymore is certainly a point to ponder. And that's just one among many points that we shall ponder right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org. Hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave. Follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible. Now, on last week's show, covering the assassination of Charlie Kirk, we focused on the reaction of those on the left who celebrated his murder with calls for even more murders, including those of Kirk's wife and children. This time round, it would be remiss of us not to consider the mourning of those who found themselves unexpectedly affected by what happened to Charlie Kirk on September 10th. And who found it difficult to understand why this event seemed so much more profoundly affecting than the myriad of tragedies that we've been hearing about day in and day out. This past Sunday's memorial event in Arizona was a testament to that unique response. So before moving on to our broader political discussion arising from these events, let's pause to take a closer look at Charlie Kirk himself and to reflect on why his absence has so profoundly affected so many people. No one could have expressed this sentiment better than did Sydney Watson on her September 17 show, from which the following audio bite on this side of our upcoming bumper is but a brief sampling. And the title of her show on that day pretty much summarized it all. Heartbroken.
I didn't know Charlie personally, and if I'm being honest, I never really listened to his interviews or his podcast or the videos that he made. But in spite of that, I find myself profoundly affected by his loss. Oh my God, sitting we're like a minute in. And that feels a little bit bizarre to say about somebody that I don't know and have never met. And yet, I really lack the words to articulate why this is so painful and why this has hit so hard. Over the years, when other figures have been attacked, I've definitely felt sympathy for them and for their families, but it has never left any meaningful, lasting impact on me emotionally. This, on the other hand, has wrecked me. I watch videos of Charlie's wife Erica talking about him and I cry. I watch the videos of his body being transported from the hospital and I cry. I watch responses from the people who knew him and I cry. And I don't know, there's something uniquely horrific about this. There's just something uniquely horrific about that. I talk to my non-political friends about this and I find myself getting extremely choked up basically every time. And I think that's why this situation has me just wondering what's so different about this? What's so different here? The pain here, at least in my opinion, is about more than the fact that this was needless, which it was. Charlie Kirk did not need to die. There was no need for this to happen. I think it's about the fact that for everything that I can see, he was a genuinely good person and he was a genuinely good man and a good father and a good husband, and he really, really wanted the best for the United States. It's about the fact that his little family, his little people, are going to grow up without a dad, and his wife Erica has lost her person, and for what? Because the guy had a bunch of opinions that differ from a portion of the population in this country. That was his crime. That's what he did that was so wrong that determined that he shouldn't live anymore. And now a bunch of people go on the internet and effectively dance on his grave and celebrate. It's sick. I don't know how else to describe it. It's inherently evil to learn about a father of two's passing and your initial response is to laugh and to jeer and to celebrate and to say that someone needs to take out his wife and children too. One of the reasons that I think this is so raw is because Charlie's death came on the back of, or I guess was another layer to this nightmare timeline that we're living in, where only a few days earlier all of us had watched this horrific, horrible video of this poor woman being stabbed to death in the neck by a lunatic and then watching her fall on the floor of a train car to bleed out, where people around her were just standing around, not helping, not doing anything. It takes a guy from the other end of the train, presumably running up to do something finally. And there's all the stills of her looking up horrified, crying into her hands. And I don't know about the rest of you, but watching that video ignited like a rage in me that sent me to Jupiter. Because what period of time are we living in where this happens on public transportation in broad daylight and nobody does anything? I'm just so sick for her family too. And just this sense of, I just have this sense of rage towards women being unsafe out in the world, people being unsafe out in the world, just trying to exist, and how we are failing one another so spectacularly. Then only a few days later, we get to see Charlie Kirk shot and killed mid-sentence with the mic still in his hand in front of a crowd of people. How traumatizing. Because some people decided that his words were worth killing for. As much as there's this part of me that wants to say, don't look away, because I do think to some extent that if we get to witness the depravity that's taking place around not just the country but the world regularly, maybe we can all get mad enough to do something about it. But then the other part of me really feels like we probably shouldn't be seeing people get murdered in 4K. So yeah, I feel really hollowed out. And I think it's compounded by the fact that over the last couple of days, people have been going to vigils and kicking them down and destroying memorials and going after people who are mourning. and spreading horrible lies about this person when he's not here to defend himself. But since all this happened, I have consumed a lot of Charlie Kirk content, finally, and come to find out that I think I would have really liked him. I think we would have gotten along really well, actually, despite the fact that we absolutely don't agree on everything. But I think he must have been a really, really, really great person. He wasn't, and he's not, this monster that the left is trying to paint him as. And maybe that's why this is so hard, because he was one of the few people who was genuinely trying to reach across the aisle and actually have meaningful dialogue. And if you watch videos of him talking to people on college campuses, he's so respectful of them. He was just a guy. He was just like everybody else. And he was trying to make a difference in the best way that he knew how. And he was spirited, and he was articulate, and he was trying to make sense of this weird world that we live in, and now he's dead. And now he's dead. There's one last thing that I want to make note of, and it's the one that I extra don't know how to articulate, but I'm going to do my best, and it relates to religion. I have been a lifelong atheist. No, my little cherub, that's not an invitation to try to convert me. Thank you. I am okay. I have many a Christian in my personal life trying to achieve that end. Jokes aside, I have been a lifelong atheist or agnostic, if that, you know, if people feel better about that term, because I do have my own ideas about things and the world and all of it. And I've looked at religion, I've read the Bible, I've done these things. There's components to this that I don't find terribly compelling. And I think that's okay. Just in the same way that I think it's okay that people have belief, and I will back up people who have belief. But in saying that, I've also had a lot of really negative experiences with cultural Christians. And I say cultural Christians because I think these are the people who use Christianity as a skin. They wear it as a skin. They use it as a shield to protect themselves from criticism. But really, when you strip that all away, I don't think that they are doing things that are emblematic of true Christianity. And up until very recently, up until I started really sort of consuming Charlie's content and listening to the way that he talks about his Christianity, I don't know how to articulate this. It's like, I get it. Like, Charlie's version of Christianity is the one that people really need to hear, because in my experience, I have been insulted and berated and degraded and called all sorts of names and accused of all sorts of things because I don't subscribe to any particular ideology. But his version of things is nothing like that.
I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I have spent hours out of my life the past few days watching Charlie Kirk debates. And if that pisses you off, then you especially should stay. Because when I tell you I've been absolutely consumed, not by the debates themselves or why I didn't agree with him, but it's our party that has left me feeling unsettled. And if you're a Democrat watching this, I really hope you take this not as an attack, but like from a friend who really cares. First, let's talk about the concept of mob mentality, which by definition just means being influenced by a larger group and losing your own personal judgment in the process. And the example I want to use is that clip that was everywhere that went viral, everybody was quoting it, where Charlie said, "I don't like the word empathy." We've probably all seen the short and the long version at this point, where he goes on to clarify that he prefers the word sympathy. Agree with them or disagree with them doesn't matter to me. The point is, the real conversation never happened because the clip was cut in half. Why? To reinforce the idea that the right is full of these monsters who reject human feelings, right? That wasn't an accident. That omission was deliberate and strategic so that you would form an opinion about a person without using your own informed personal judgment. Does that bother you? If somebody's truly evil, shouldn't the truth just be enough? Shouldn't we be trusted to come to the right conclusion all on our own? Maybe you would have come to the same conclusion, but maybe you wouldn't have. And then there's the hypocrisy, okay? If you honestly ask me how many times in the past year I've seen the left dox and unemploy a person over hateful speech, I wouldn't be able to. And I get it. Actions have consequences. I'm not arguing that. But the same principles apply to us. If we sound the fascism alarm, we cannot celebrate death over speech. If we advocate for gun control, we cannot celebrate gun violence. If we call for diversifying our worldview, we can't then close off conversations that are uncomfortable, but that could possibly, maybe, lead to some kind of understanding. If we call the right a cult, we cannot cancel influencers who show empathy and sympathy to the wrong family. Think about it. One of the signs of a cult is pressuring members to cut off family members and friends who are outside of the group. Another is using guilt and shame to enforce conformity. Another, creating a me versus them mentality, demonizing them and creating dependence in us.
Coming from a lifelong Democrat, that was an absolutely brilliant analysis. Got that audio bite third hand from Romanian TV, who wasn't sure where he got it from originally, but the young lady speaks for herself. And why am I not surprised that, looks-wise, she had more in common with Sydney Sweeney than with Whoopi Goldberg? You know what I'm saying? Merely coincidence? Just asking. And I'm also asking myself, what the hell was that woman ever doing in the Democratic Party? If we sound the fascism alarm, we cannot celebrate death over speech. If we advocate for gun control, we cannot celebrate gun violence. That she was able to zero in on such obvious and critical contradictions in so articulate and principled a way is not anything that I would associate with the left, nor with the Democratic Party. Why would someone with that level of intellectual and moral integrity ever be a lifelong member of America's party of slavery, of socialism, of fascism, and communism? And you know, I think she said it to herself. She was lied to. It never ceases to amaze me how many people who actually hold values of the right find themselves aligned with and supporting parties of the left. Many were duped into believing, for example, that freedom of speech was a value on the left, while censorship was to be found on the right. Again, a myth based on the fake political spectrum that puts fascism on the right where freedom properly belongs. And I also see lefty podcasters like Shoe on Head and Jimmy Dore in this category as well. And so I was reminded of Erica Kirk's citing of Jesus Christ's famous quote this past Sunday. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. And forgive me for saying this, but that was as much a political statement in Christ's time as it is today, when referring to the broad voting masses who support any party of the left. And bravo to Sidney Watson for having the courage to address the question of religious belief, particularly given her own perspective on the subject. Hers was a classic demonstration of what I've been arguing all along, that Christians and so-called atheists are not in a competition over social and political values. Her expression, cultural Christians, is not so unlike the term the religious righteous that I found myself using on a few past broadcasts. Neither term is meant to be a criticism of Christian beliefs or values themselves, but to the inappropriate injection of such beliefs into a subject area or debate where they do not apply. That was what was at the heart of my strong disagreement with Michael Knowles back on August 27th. And I broadly define the religious righteous as those who dismiss philosophy and sound philosophical principles because they have religion and they think that that's enough. Worse, too many Christians who fall into these categories are among those who think that atheism, again, is a competing belief system and that atheists are people with whom Christians should not align or associate. And this is not an attitude shared by so-called atheists. So again, bravo to Sidney Watson for offering herself as Exhibit A, Exhibit Atheists, in this regard. And above all, please, atheism is not the cause of socialism, communism, or fascism. These are three political ideologies shared by people of all religious and non-religious stripes alike, and the same can be said for freedom and capitalism. Which is precisely why, when it comes to politics and governance, it is far more important to know about the political polarities of left and right than it is to be concerned with differences in religious beliefs and secular beliefs. And that now brings us to our primary question as to why these labels have become so important with regard to the Charlie Kirk assassination and to the suspension of Jimmy Kimmel. To kick off that part of the discussion, on this side of our bumper, two audio selections about Jimmy Kimmel, both originally released on September 19th. The first by Fox News, and the second, ironically, by Matt Walsh, who this time round I am in full agreement with, as I am with his earlier podcast of September 15, which follows on the return side of the bumper on the war between left and right.
Pro-Jimmy Kimmel protesters holding a rally outside ABC offices in New York City, showing that the left is more outraged over a late-night comic getting suspended than the cold-blooded murder of Charlie Kirk. According to reports, Jimmy Kimmel was about to double down on attacking MAGA, making himself the victim, and say critics were twisting his words. But Disney execs feared he would just make things worse. And now Late Night is rallying around Jimmy and trying to turn him into a low-rated martyr.
But tonight, we are all Jimmy Kimmel. I still have a show, though, right?
Kimmel was suspended by ABC after pressure from the FCC, leaving everyone thinking WTF.
I've always admired and respected Mr. Trump. And if you've ever seen me say anything negative about him, that's just AI.
And Democrats are continuing their collective freakout. Tampon, who had a COVID snitch line, says Kimmel's suspension proves we're living in North Korea.
Ever wondered how democracy dies? You're witnessing it. It's one of the most outrageous affronts on this. This is North Korea-style stuff.
If Congress is willing to say, we're going to completely abdicate even this most important power, then what is left to constrain a runaway presidency, and in particular, presidency that is heading more and more towards dictatorship?
It's unacceptable, it's unconscionable, and it's un-American.
Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, House passes a resolution honoring Charlie Kirk, and 58 Democrats voted against it, including AOC, who used her floor speech to smear Kirk.
His rhetoric and beliefs were ignorant, uneducated, and sought to disenfranchise millions of Americans. Far from the working, quote, working tirelessly to promote unity, unquote, asserted by the majority in this resolution. It is equally important that Congress does unite to reject the government's attempt to weaponize this moment into an all-out assault on free speech across the country.
President Trump slamming those Democrats.
Just today, the House Democrats voted against condemning the political assassination of Charlie Kirk. Who could vote against the condemning? All they're saying, please condemn the assassination of a human being. And they said, no, then we're not going to do that.
They've never contemplated the possibility of facing any consequences for their actions.
The left-wing activist Jimmy Kimmel was finally taken off the air. Here's what Kimmel said, in case you missed it.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it.
Now, Kimmel was taken off the air just hours after the FCC chair, a man named Brendan Carr, gave an interview with Benny Johnson yesterday where he suggested that ABC, or more specifically ABC's affiliates, might be violating the terms of their broadcast licenses by airing Kimmel's show. Now, for background, it's been clear for many years that Kimmel was violating the terms of ABC's broadcast license. He was never performing any kind of comedy routine. He was simply delivering propaganda on behalf of the Democrat Party every single night, seemingly unconcerned with the fact that his ratings were plummeting year after year. In fact, on several occasions, he was caught working directly with Democrats in the Senate to distribute campaign materials. He celebrated the termination of conservatives, including Tucker Carlson. He celebrated when Donald Trump was banned from Twitter. He routinely embraced censorship and partisanship, and now he's finally gone, at least for the time being. Now, Kimmel knew that it wasn't true that Kirk's assassin was a Trump supporter. He knew that it made no sense to suggest that. He knew he was defaming a Christian husband and father who had just been murdered in front of his family and in front of the entire world, but he lied anyway, like the disgusting scumbag that he is. And he thought there would be no consequences for doing so because he's been lying for more than a decade in pretty much the same way. And indeed, normally, conservatives would hear smug degenerates like Kimmel say stuff like this, and they'd just shrug it off. Meanwhile, the left would destroy conservatives' livelihoods for infractions that weren't half as egregious conservatives wouldn't start a campaign to cancel Jimmy Kimmel's show. They certainly wouldn't call the federal government to do anything. That was the state of play right up until the moment that Charlie was murdered. And that is not the state of play anymore. The left is simultaneously celebrating the murder of Charlie Kirk and also claiming that he was murdered by a right-winger, which is a lie. The assassination of Charlie Kirk was unequivocally an act of LGBT terrorism. The evidence is overwhelming. Charlie was murdered by a leftist who was in a relationship with a man who identifies as transgender, a man who identifies as a woman. The shooter engraved his ammunition with messages that are commonly used by left-wing Antifa groups, calling Charlie a fascist, as well as a reference to a fetish subculture. Days before the murder, several trans-identifying individuals and people in their social groups posted messages on social media indicating that they were aware that the assassination would soon take place. One of those messages read, "Charlie Kirk is coming to my college tomorrow. I really hope someone evaporates him literally. Let's just say something big will happen tomorrow." The account that posted that thread is now suspended from X. Another post from 5 days before the shooting indicated that something big was coming soon. Then after the shooting, the author wrote, "Well, that's that, and another chud bites the dust." Here's another. This one was written on September 3rd. It begins, quote, "It'd be funny if someone like Charlie Kirk got shot on September 10th. That's just a sample of some publicly available posts that appeared to predict Charlie's murder. Even as all that's happening, these same leftists are pretending, in defiance of all the evidence and of basic common sense, that the shooter was actually a MAGA white supremacist. They're pushing the fantasy that Charlie Kirk was murdered because he wasn't right-wing enough. Now, they know that it's not true. They know that no rational person could possibly believe it, but they're saying it anyway. The official talking point of the left is that Charlie was killed by the right. All that matters to leftists is their collective mission. The shooter fulfilled part of the left's mission by killing Charlie, by murdering someone who dared to engage them in free and open debates that they could not win. And now the shooter is fulfilling another mission. He's a useful tool to defame and malign the right." Prominent outlets like CNN are doing their best to further the same narrative. Take a look at this screenshot of CNN's homepage the other day. There are 9 stories about Charlie's assassination. None of them discuss the shooter's motive or his belief in left-wing ideology and his connection to transgenderism. None of them discuss the gloating of leftists or the messages that predicted the attack. Instead, the stories are about the job that Kash Patel is doing, or how leftists are getting fired for celebrating Kirk's death, or how the shooter's father turned him in. Meanwhile, all over social media, major figures in the American left are openly lying. Here's Harvard professor Lawrence Tribe, for example. Quote, "Kirk's apparent assassin seems to have been ultra-MAGA, exploding the GOP MAGA attempt to pin the blame for this tragedy on liberals." This is the same line that they used after the first Trump assassination attempt. As you probably remember, Democrats said the shooting was either staged or that the shooter was somehow a Trump supporter, which they still claim to this day. Meanwhile, the LA Times apparently cited an expert who decided that Charlie Kirk was shot in a white supremacist gang hit. And then there's this post from Jackie Sartoris, the DA in Portland, Maine, who was recently installed with the help of George Soros. She wants you to know that, quote, "There are now increasing questions about the actual shooter's possible affinity with the extreme far right. This may have involved a beef between alt-right Nick Fuentes and the victim." That's a government official, a prosecutor, who's supposed to care about things like evidence and facts, and, well, so much for that. Over on X, you'll find posts with tens of millions of views and hundreds of thousands of likes with the exact same message. Huge numbers of people are spreading the claim that the shooter was a right-winger, the totally false, fabricated, made-up, no basis in reality. Perhaps one of the worst examples is Randy Weingarten, the president of the largest teachers union in the country. She reposted a post from someone named Jeannie Ryder, and the post says, "The leftist students in Utah who didn't want Charlie Kirk to speak did what leftists do. They signed petitions, staged a protest, and lined up to challenge him. The right-winger who didn't want Charlie Kirk to speak did what right-wingers do and shot him. We are not the same." Now, Randy reposted that inverted reality nonsense with the caption, "This seems important to state." Yes, the leader of the largest teachers union in the country. To her, it's not only important to state total absolute nonsense and lies that completely flip reality on its head, but it's also important to brand all right-wingers as violent killers. Even if the killer was a right-wing extremist, which he definitely unequivocally was not, the left would still own Charlie's murder because they've taken ownership of it. They spent the last 4 days since his assassination celebrating en masse. Thousands upon thousands of them have personally endorsed the man who slaughtered Charlie. So that even if the guy were a right-wing Republican, which again, he is not, he would still now be one of theirs. Yeah, there's no point in fact-checking like this, really. There's no point in engaging with any of the people who are posting this content and trying to persuade them that based on the evidence, they're wrong. That's what Charlie attempted to do, what he did with unmatched skill. The left has made the decision to respond to that kind of dialogue with violence. And when I say the left, I'm not using shorthand. I'm not painting with too broad a brush. I'm talking about the left. Hundreds of thousands of students, including Democrats, knew that they wouldn't get shouted down. They wouldn't get violently attacked. They wouldn't suffer any consequences whatsoever. They'd be able to engage with a leading conservative voice at length in a respectful forum. Which, by the way, is something that nobody on the left ever does. Ever. None of them ever do this. Who on the left is going into a crowd where there's going to be conservatives and saying, you know what, I'll talk to any of you right now. I'll debate you on camera live. None of them. Not a single one in the country is doing it. Political violence is almost exclusive to the left. The left is responsible for torching federal courthouses, churches, small businesses. They're responsible for BLM riots, Antifa, responsible for the massacre of Christian children in schools and churches, responsible for multiple attempts on the president's life, as well as the violent attacks on pro-life pregnancy centers. They're responsible for vandalizing Teslas, torching Tesla storefronts. They're the ones attacking ICE agents. They're the ones attacking police. The left is a near monopoly on politically motivated violence in this country. It was a Tim Walz appointee, apparently suffering from schizophrenia, who murdered the lawmaker in Minnesota. It was Trump supporters and Trump supporters alone who died on January 6th, which is the one example that they can actually give of right-wing political violence, right-wing riots, which they obviously have greatly exaggerated for the last 5 years. And the only people who died in that were Trump supporters. Political violence has been going in only one direction for a very long time now.
Yeah, like always and forever, by definition. You are listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. If January 6th's peaceful protest in Washington, D.C. is the only cited example of right-wing violence, they couldn't have picked a worse example. The only violence exhibited there was on the part of state officials and the left, and we covered that event during the week it occurred. Nothing's changed. Like Canada's Peaceful Freedom Convoy protest held in Ottawa, labeled by Canada's fascist government as a violent right-wing insurrection, and every other leftist label they could possibly project on the right, both the American left and the Canadian left have been consistently trying to do everything possible to get those on the right to react violently, and they have consistently failed, much to their frustration. Remember, what the left needs most desperately is some kind of justification to use violence against the right, because even the left is trapped by the principle that it's never acceptable to be seen as the attacker but as the protector. This is what the so-called information war is all about, the war between truth and propaganda. So, to justify the use of violence, the left goes to the outlandish extreme of declaring that words and ideas themselves are violence. Therefore, violent reactions to words are morally justifiable as self-defense, don't you know?
The next time someone says sticks and stones can break our bones, but words can never hurt us, set them straight.
Hit them with a stick or a stone.
Wow, even the hippie generation of the 1960s and 70s had enough sense to figure that one out. What the hell has happened to today's generations? When someone says that their feelings were hurt by someone else's words, it must be understood that whatever quote-unquote emotional pain is being experienced is 100% self-inflicted. The injured party chooses to be injured by taking offense. It is not possible to hurt someone's feelings as if feelings are some kind of independent entity capable of physical injury. And if it was true that words are violence, then how come the words of the left are not violent enough for them to accomplish their objective? And so failing to persuade, then they use words to openly threaten violence, to the point of advocating the murder of Charlie Kirk's wife and kids. Now those kinds of words are direct threats of violence and should be treated as acts of violence. It's not the words that constitute the offense, it is the announced intention of action that is the threat of violence here. Perhaps one of the most reprehensible reactions to Charlie Kirk's murder was the one exhibited in Congress when dozens of Democrats actually voted against condemning the murder and against honoring Charlie Kirk for his free speech advocacy. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, actually had the nerve to stand up in Congress and openly and demonstrably lie about Charlie Kirk. His rhetoric and beliefs were ignorant, uneducated, and sought to disenfranchise millions of Americans, far from working tirelessly to promote unity. It is equally important that Congress does unite to reject the government's attempt to weaponize this moment into an all-out assault on free speech across the country. Wow, what a hypocrite. Her record of assaults against free speech have been documented by so many online bloggers I can't count them. One thing you'll never hear from projected floating abstractions like that expressed by AOC is a single example of something that, say, Charlie Kirk said that would qualify as being ignorant or uneducated. From where I sit, ignorant and uneducated are two of the best words I can find to describe AOC herself. But the war about who is on the left or right, and about which of those two polarities is the violent one, rages on.
When we attack people, we have to be careful. Well, the problem is on the left. If you look at the problem is on the left. It's not on the right, like some people like to say on the right. The problem we have is on the left. And when you look at the agitators, you look at the scum that speaks so badly of our country, the American flag burnings all over the place, that's the left, that's not the right.
Words have meanings. Again, left and right are ideas and principles, actions and policies. They are not people as such, even though people themselves might identify with one polarity or the other. But people are malleable and they can change, as we have been increasingly witnessing with more and more people identifying on the left, finding themselves aligning with the right. However, the concepts of left and right do not change. They stay the same. They define political reality and the concepts associated with tyranny on the left and with freedom on the right. And pundits on the right are making this issue far more complicated than it needs to be. Once you start with a correct definition of what is left and what is right, the rest pretty much falls into place, with most mysteries of what motivates each side already solved. The who, however, is always another matter. And on that count, you may have heard that Donald Trump regards Antifa as a terrorist organization, about which lawyer Robert Barnes had this to say during a September 21 conversation with David Freiheit.
So ultimately, from a federal perspective, what we want is Antifa designated a foreign terrorist organization, as opposed to a purely domestic terrorist organization. However, Antifa is absolutely a foreign terrorist organization. Consider that CBS was just lying today, I believe, about Antifa. They said Antifa was an organization that started in like just a few years ago that mostly opposes neo-Nazis and racists. Complete lie. Complete absolute lie. Antifa started in Italy, where it expanded to Germany, where communists came up with a new name rather than call themselves communists. They said, oh, now there's fascists. We can use the fascists to justify our own violence. Because it's important. Fascism and communism were two socialists who hated each other. That's all they were. They're really all on the left. There's no fascist on the right. They're on the left. That's why they called themselves socialist. That's why the S of the National Nazi Party stands for socialist. Because what they were socialist.
I love how Wikipedia or AI has to protect it. The contemporary Antifa movement in the U.S. is not directly connected to its European predecessors, but draws inspiration.
But they're lying. Antifa started in the late 1920s in northern Italy. That's why their favorite, one of the biggest, one of the things that the assassin the alleged assassin.
Ciao, Bella, Ciao.
Is the original Antifa song from Italy. Antifa has no English origin. Antifa comes from an Italian word translated into a German word as anti-fascist. By definition, Antifa is a foreign terrorist organization.
More than that, Antifa is a pro-fascist communist organization. Terrorism is merely one component of that ideological movement. Black Lives Matter sits in the same category and classification, and, oh yeah, former Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau bent a knee to BLM while terrorizing Canadians from coast to coast with his lockdowns and mandatory needle injections. The fascists are everywhere, folks. Everywhere, that is, except on the right. That's why the left is in a frenzy trying to associate the right with violence, an impossibility once it is recognized that the right represents freedom and capitalism, along with the principles of consent and voluntarism on which they are based. The left represents every form of tyranny possible, along with its principles of initiatory force and violence, censorship, and lies. That is why, for the left, it is critical that Charlie Kirk's assassin be seen as an ideologue of the right, which represents a contradiction in terms from the outset. On this side of our upcoming bumper, the X-22 report of September 15 continues to address this glaring contradiction, while on the return side, Stephen Crowder, in conversation with Piers Morgan and Joe Walsh, debates the blame game between the right and the left.
Now, the deep state, the corrupt politicians, big tech, fake news, the puppet masters, you can see everything that they tried to do with Charlie Kirk and the assassin is completely and utterly failing. And they tried to cover up the fact that this individual is trans. They tried to lead everyone in a completely different direction. And you could see that the governor of Utah was trying to do this too with a lot of the others that were involved in this. But their entire narrative now is completely and utterly falling apart. And people understand that this individual is not a conservative. This person has been living with a trans person. Actually, the trans person is this person's lover. They were planning to assassinate Charlie Kirk. And we're starting to realize, and I think we've always known this, that this operation wasn't just a lone gunman running around. Because that's what they like to really use in every single one of these type of events. But what we know is that this was a coordinated effort from the very, very beginning. And it was an operation that took timing, an operation that they had to prepare for. And I do believe that there were a lot of pieces that they had to put into place. And you could see on Discord and many other places, they were all celebrating that they accomplished their mission, which tells you everything you need to know. Now, of course, this is working against the fake news. This is working against the D's. This is working against everything that they've been trying to convince the people of, because they've been trying to convince the people that the right, they're the extremists. They are the domestic terrorists. They are the ones who are inciting violence. But what now, when people are starting to research and people are starting to look at what's really going on, they could see that Charlie, he debated at colleges. He wasn't racist. He was using facts. He was very good at what he did, and he let people speak. He wasn't telling them they can't use their words. He wasn't yelling at them. He wasn't demeaning them. He was not hateful, even though they told him he was hateful, and he always said, give me an example. And you could see that more and more people are starting to see this, and more people are looking at his videos, which is actually destroying the deep state's narrative. And what people are starting to realize is that the left, every single time, they're the ones who are pushing violence. And you can see this is what they do. And of course, what are they doing? They're trying to convince people that the right is a threat. And yes, we don't want killings, but they're fascists, they're Hitler. And they keep repeating these things. They're extremists, they're domestic terrorists. And everyone that's listening to this is saying, okay, we get what you're saying. And this is why these people are violent. And then they come out and say, hey, by the way, we don't accept this. But they're fascists, they're Hitler. And that's what they keep doing over and over and over. Governor Josh Shapiro put this out and said, No one party is immune from political violence. My family and I can attest to that. Using this rhetoric of rage and calling some of our fellow Americans scum, no matter how profound our differences, only creates more division and makes it harder to heal. That's interesting. Well, Rich Barris responds and says, you were firebombed by a pro-Palestinian sympathizer, not a conservative. They tend to be on the political left, not the right. Calling someone scum doesn't insinuate that they threaten your safety. Calling someone racist, fascist, Hitler, etc. does. Absolutely. So once again, yes, this is a terrible thing. Nobody wants this to happen. But it was the left once again. Now, let's take this to the next step. They're saying, hey, we need to calm the situation down. The right has to tone it all down. Well, give me some examples of the right saying we want you all killed. We want justice. We want you in prison for your crimes that you've committed. And think about it. The deep state players, they keep saying, oh, it's the right. It's the right. They're extremists and things like that. Well, let's put all this in perspective. And Red Eagle Politics put this out and said, left-wing violence doesn't happen. Most violence is right-wing. Well, let's take a look at this. Far-left violence since 2016. Let's see. 2016 BLM riots. Nope, not right people. 2016 police shooting in Dallas. 2016 police shooting in Baton Rouge. 2016 NYPD officer shot as revenge for Eric Garner. 2017 Trump inauguration riots. 2017 Berkeley riots. 2017 congressional GOP baseball practice shooting. 2018 ICE facilities firebombed. 2019 Dayton shooting. 2020 BLM riots, countless damage facilities on facilities. 2020 fatal Chaz shootings. 2020 shootings of Aaron Danielson. 2021 unjustified Ashley Babbitt shooting. 2021 Waukesha massacre. 2022 far left assassination plot on Dem mayoral candidate. 2022 Lee Zeldin stabbing attempt. 2023 Tennessee Christian School. 2023 Evergreen Colorado school shooting. 2024 Butler. 2024 second assassination attempt on Trump. 2024 Abundant Life Christian School shooting. 2024 United Healthcare CEO murder. 2025 Tesla's lit on fire. 2025 murder at the Israeli embassy. 2025 Josh Shapiro firebombing attempt by Hamas sympathizer. 2025 LA ICE riots and attacks on ICE officers. 2025 ICE facilities ambushed, officers shot. 2025 Minnesota lawmaker shooting. 2025 Minneapolis Christian school. 2025 anti-white North Carolina stabbing. 2025 various attacks on GOP offices. 2025 attempted Utah news station firebombing. 2025 Charlie Kirk assassination in Utah. So let's see, is it the right or is it the left? All of these are left. Think about it. And most of these have to do with trans or Antifa. And also those people that are pushing Hamas and Palestine, they're also part of Antifa, which then leads into trans people. Think about this for a second. It's always the same groups.
The assassination of Charlie Kirk has sparked a bitter and reductive blame game between right and left, turbocharged by inflammatory calls for vengeance on the fringes of one side and callous celebrations on the other. Neither side wants to find common cause. Both hold the other side accountable for the febrile climate which led to Kirk's appalling murder. Viral clips appear to show people on either side doing anything other than taking the temperature down. Stephen Crowder's call for violence is one such example, for which he's now issued this clarification.
People may take some clips and tell you that Stephen Crowder is irresponsible. He advocated violence. That's right. I am. I want to be crystal clear about that. I am advocating for lawful violence defensively that has been abandoned for years, and I want it to replace where grace was afforded before.
Stephen, welcome back to Uncensored. As you know, a lot of people believed you were advocating for a violent response. You've clarified that now. And people are saying, you know, is that a sincere clarification or have you just calmed down?
It wasn't a clarification. It was a repeat. And I stand by it. I am advocating for lawful, maybe let me clarify, ruthless violence in defense of us and our own. And if you give me 1.5 minutes, I can make it extra crystal clear if we need to. What you're seeing with Charlie Kirk is what got through. Charlie Kirk lived under a cloud just as I have. It's the reason that I stopped doing Change My Minds, where there were 12 felonious assaults, attempts at battery, and attempts on my life. And I know quite a few, and many I don't, of Charlie Kirk. I want to be clear. I want those on the left to speak freely and to be able to host their events with minimal security as they do now for the rest of their lives. Just as surely, I want them to be deathly terrified of showing up and acting with the increasing violence as they have at our events. And that goes both ways. Hey, if there's a spat of right-wing violence that's spreading across this country, treat those people the same way that we treat yours. But you won't find it. Every position that the right holds has been presented as violence, including silence, by the way. In other words, if you're pro-life, it's violence against women. If you're against men and women's sports, it's violence against trans. It's genocide. It's erasing them. If you're against Juneteenth as a holiday, it's violence. You're pro-First Amendment, violence, because you're inciting violence. You're pro-Second Amendment, violence, because you believe people should be able to commit gun violence. And then if we remain silent, that's also violence. And so people deal with the right with violence. Here's my challenge. Find me one example of a Charlie Kirk on the left, not an elected official. I'll allow any speaker, any comedian this century. One example of somebody who was murdered, assassinated, hemorrhaged out in front of his family in cold blood and gleefully celebrated.
Okay, Joe.
I'll just be brief again. The data is pretty clear, and historically it's been pretty clear that there's political violence on the right and the left in this country for years. And I could argue, and I would argue, but I won't hear that there's historically been more political violence coming from the right. But suffice to say, I think you and I, Pierce, would agree, let me finish, man, please.
Please argue it. You can't just make a vague claim and not substantiate it.
Pierce, you and I would agree, for the sake of this conversation, that political violence is in fact a both sides problem. Stephen, you would acknowledge, I think, that there is political violence on, and there has been political violence on the right as well. So why don't we all just condemn it all? That's what we all should do.
Although leftist Joe Walsh, a Republican, believe it or not, offers no evidence to support the initiation of violence by the right, he is ironically correct when he says that political violence is in fact a both sides problem. That's because those on the right are always being violently attacked by those on the left. That's what makes it a both sides problem. And as I explained last week, this is an attempt to achieve a false moral equivalence between those on the left who initiate force as the means to all of their ideological objectives and those on the right who resort to force only as a defensive measure and far too infrequently for the likes of Steve Crowder. And this idea that calling someone fascist, racist, Hitler, or whatever signifies a threat to safety remains very concerning to me, because just about everyone seems to accept it, including many on the right, which I raised on last week's show. Got this feedback from listener Trevor D. in response, who sent the following Ayn Rand quote to my attention. Quote, "There is no difference between communism and socialism except in the means of achieving the same ultimate end. Communism proposes to enslave men by force, socialism by vote. It is merely the difference between murder and suicide. Fascism, Nazism, communism, and socialism are only superficial variations of the same monstrous theme, collectivism," end quote. Now, the problem with that quote is that it's true. And therefore, for those who view fascists as an existential threat, to remain consistent with that idea that it's okay to initiate violence against fascists, then why isn't it just as okay to initiate violence against socialists, communists, and anybody else? In fact, on those grounds, you could justify violence against Canada's entire parliament. I mean, who can ever forget how Canada's entire parliament actually honored a Nazi war criminal not so long ago because of the Canadian establishment's hatred of all things Russian, which continues to this day. But as I heard Blair White quoted by Shoe on Head this past September 18, quote, "They don't kill you because you're a Nazi. They call you a Nazi so they can kill you," end quote. And unfortunately, as I feared last week, even many on the right agree with the idea of killing fascists as being justifiable. But I still have to question that assumption.
Randy still calls people fascist tyrants. Your favorite wrestler, Macho Man Randy Weingarten. She's the head of the American Federation of Teachers, or has a new book called Why Fascists Fear Teachers. Would you call that bad timing?
Incredible bad timing, but also troubling.
Mm-hmm.
She's supposed to be a head of education.
Yeah.
She held a job where she was in charge of schools.
Yeah.
And doesn't know what the word fascist means.
Yeah.
If you look at the definition of fascist, it's your projection.
Yeah.
Anarchy, overwhelming government,
mm-hmm.
suppressing the other side, controlling the media. That's you.
Mm-hmm.
So unless the book is a mirror, what is wrong with it? That's what's wrong with the education. When the people at the top don't know what the words mean really well, that's a problem.
Yes, it is.
Imagine what might happen if the real fascists on the left actually picked up a dictionary and looked up a few basic definitions. Would they commit suicide to help rid the world of fascism? Nah, I didn't think so. So here's a warning. Do not fall for all those on the left who are now trying to talk unity and walk back some of the leftist reactions, including Barack Obama's recent fake condemnation of those who support the violence. Quote, let the record say that on both sides, undoubtedly, there are people who are extremists and who say things that are contrary to what I believe are America's core values, end quote. And of course, after that, he tore into the values of Charlie Kirk. But I can think of no greater enemy to America's core values than Barack Hussein Obama. Check out our broadcast entitled The Barack Obama Bombshell for any evidence you want on that. Let's be clear, the left and right can never be quote-unquote unified. They are opposite polarities. Evil cannot unite with the good. Wrong and right cannot unite. Life and death cannot compromise on any level, let alone unite. So whatever conclusions we may draw from all of these ongoing events, it would be a grave mistake to assume that we can close the door on any of them. There's still a lot of speculation about the details behind Charlie Kirk's assassination that may change the narrative in ways we still cannot predict. But I was relieved to learn that Kirk's wife and children were not on site during his assassination, just one of many minor details that has been amended since the story first broke. So from the look of things at this point in time, it would appear that Charlie Kirk's assassination may have pushed the turning point into a tipping point. And as for Jimmy Kimmel, well...
$200, name for a famous psychologist. What type of oral blunder reveals an unconscious aspect of the mind? Jimmy.
Farting?
I guess that was just another Fartian slip on Kimmel's part, so nothing's really changed with him over the years. You know, I understand that ABC has offered him an opportunity to come back, so he may well return to inspire even more on the right to laugh at him. But who knows, if he starts to say something that's true, they might actually be able to laugh with him. If there's one eternal lesson to be learned from the death of Charlie Kirk, it is that you can always kill a person, but you can never kill an idea, not even a bad one. Which is why, like eternity itself, our vigilance against bad ideas must never cease to be carried from one generation to the next, not simply by identifying and resisting the bad, but by identifying and supporting what is just right, the good. And that's exactly what we're planning to do when you join us again next week as we continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Assassination. You know what's interesting about assassination? Well, not only does it change those popularity polls in a big fucking hurry, but it's also interesting to notice who it is we assassinate. Do you ever notice who it is? Stop to think of who it is we kill. It's always people who've told us to live together in harmony and try to love one another. Jesus, Gandhi, Lincoln, John Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, John Lennon. They all said, try to live together peacefully. Bam! right in the fucking head.